Venture through a wasteland twisted by dark magic, undead monsters, and contagious insanity where life and death are no longer opposites, but a spectrum of cruelties. Emerging from the dregs, an old king makes one final attempt to save his realm. Today's episode is brought to you by the newest project of Lee Ellis, author of the Killdash series, Godblood. Is a grim, dark short story with the audio runtime of 2 hours available on Audible and a digital print available for those that prefer reading. This exciting adventure is available now. But parents beware, it's not for the faint of heart. Stay tuned after the episode for an exclusive audio clip of Godblood. Welcome to the Nerdy Old Men Podcast. The greatest nerd, geek, and pop culture podcast in history. With your host, Redneck Wes.
He keeps screwing up, people. God.
And that old bald man, Chad.
Come on, man. This is a fun place. Don't be a...
Good morning, Redneck Wes. Yeah, it's that kind of day for you.
Yeah.
As you travel down the interstate to get down here to...
Yeah, fighting traffic, and it sucks when you don't sleep well the night before, so I'm just like... But I made it.
Well, you know what what really would help you stay awake is a good story.
I love stories. Like to read. And yeah. I need to add some new books to the collection.
We're going to talk today to an author we've spoke to before. We talked to him at Fanboy. He was kind enough to come over and tell us about his first book, and now his second book is out. And on the phone, we got Mr. Lee Ellis, the author of the Killdash series. Lee, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you guys?
Good, man. I was excited when you sent me the picture of you wearing our extremely stylish and awesome podcast t-shirt, holding up both your books, man. We're excited for you, man. How's it feel to get the second one out?
It feels good. Yeah. You know, a lot of work and finally getting some traction and get to release some things and hear back from readers. So, you know, it's a lot of... Writing a book is a lot of like late nights and, you know, working alone and putting something together. You don't know if it's going to be any good or not. And then, yeah, finally getting to get it out there to everybody and see the reception is really fun, really exciting. It's worth all the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know a lot of folks got to, of our fans listened to that, initial episode. But man, tell us,
Give us a little overview of the first book.
Well, to start out first with what made you decide to, you know, stab out on your own and be an author and self-publish and all that good stuff. What made you decide to do that?
So it's, I guess I'll summarize because that's almost like, telling me to give my life story. It's all kind of been like leading towards this, but yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, since I was a little kid, I've always been a big movie buff. That's kind of how my family and I would share quality time. You know, I'd stay with my mom on the weekends, and she would, you know, that's when Blockbuster was, you know, like the biggest thing. We actually didn't have a Blockbuster; we had a pick a flick. So we'd go get a movie at
the family video.
Yeah, we had something similar. Yeah.
Yeah, like Hollywood Video, stuff like that. So we'd rent a couple movies, watch them over the weekends. And then, you know, with my dad, he's like the biggest Lord of the Rings fan you've ever met. He like rereads the series, literally like once a year.
Wow. That's awesome.
You know, so he has like original publications. He was reading it in high school.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I kind of had that coming from both sides. You know, my mom's like introducing me to Star Wars and all of her favorite 80s movies, Back to the Future and Alien, things like that. And you know, my dad, on the other hand, he's reading The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings to us and Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I started writing really early on. It was kind of just a way for me to kind of almost playing, I guess, you know, but more of, you know, going on in my head. So, you know, I had all sisters and, we didn't really like live in a traditional neighborhood with a lot of neighborhood kids. So a lot of times I'd just sit and write and the stories would go nowhere, but it was kind of like the fun escape for me. And then kind of fast forward to like after high school, moved to Los Angeles. And at that point, I was really into filmmaking and kind of like I spoke about on the brief interview we had at Fanboy. That was almost kind of out of, I don't want to say laziness. That doesn't feel like the right word. But I realized that writing novels was really, really difficult. And if I just wrote a screenplay, you know, you're kind of building this blueprint. You're kind of hitting the main points. You're writing the dialogue. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to write novels. That's too much work. I'm just going to write screenplays. So then, I moved to LA. That was an amazing kind of, life experience. I was out there from 20 to 24. So kind of some, pivotal young adult years. Never really broke through with the film industry. I had some cool experiences with the industry. But eventually I moved back. And when I came back here, I really decided, I kind of went full circle. I was like, you know what? It's when you make a movie, screenwriting is, might be easier than writing a novel, but then you've got to get a crew, you got to get a director, you got to get actors, you got to have all this money. You know, maybe I should go, try writing books, because when you're writing books, you're the actor, you're the director, you're the producer, and it's all free. You need some sort of word processor to do it.
Right. And you can do it your way too. It's all you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to. I had some experiences like that in Los Angeles where I would work on an indie film and you're butting heads because somebody has put their time or money into it and they want to have a say so. And, if you're writing a book, it's just all you, it's your time, it's your ideas. You don't have to debate really anything. So I really jumped back into that. Wrote several stories, tried to go kind of the traditional publishing route. So for anyone that's kind of unfamiliar with that process, how the industry works, to speak to a publisher, you have to have an agent, essentially. So the agent is kind of this gatekeeper. You can't call a publisher. Their numbers aren't listed. Their addresses typically aren't listed. If you do send them a letter, it's going to just go straight to the trash. Jeez. So you have to have your agent. Like any kind of agent, they're kind of like your realtor, your representative, your attorney. Then became that process. And to get an agent, you have to write a query letter. So typically a query letter is three paragraphs. So you have, your first paragraph, is doing your genre, your word count, your target audience. Your second paragraph is describing the book. And then your third paragraph is usually describing why you are qualified to write that book.
That sounds like some kind of mafia racket is what that sounds like to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have literally one out of those three paragraphs, which is already so short. You have one paragraph to sell, and if you guys have seen the size of my book, it's like 500-600 pages. So I try to break that into, one paragraph. And it's then and you can, yeah. And then it can be, depending on how you word it, you could make your story sound like 10 different things if you don't choose the proper words, because you don't have any context or anything. It's that third paragraph. That's where people typically list, they'll say, I worked for NASA, or I was, I was Stephen King's secretary.
It's like a resume paragraph, right?
Yeah. And I have a feeling, this might just me be, thinking bitterly, but it seems like, that third paragraph, regardless of what your story's about, when you start name dropping, because I've seen, I will say the community is really, really cool, really friendly. And, on Reddit, if somebody breaks through and they say, oh, I got an agent, they'll usually share their query letter because everyone's trying to figure out, what's
like
a good
this is how
letter.
To do it.
Yeah. How to do it. How to help each other out. Yeah. That's pretty
cool. And I've always thought that was, you know, really nice, but then you go and read these query letters and it'll say something like that, you know, in the last paragraph, it'll literally say, you know, I've just retired from NASA, or, you know, I saw one, someone got through and I'm reading the synopsis. I'm like, well, this book sounds cool, but it's not anything that, you know, it doesn't sound crazy. And then I get to the bottom and it says they were like a test writer for George R. R. Martin or Game of Thrones or something. I'm like, oh, okay.
So just your third paragraph just saying, hey, I'm Lee, I'm really awesome, is probably not it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
So you decided to do this thing on your own because it you could control your own destiny, I guess, is kind of.
Yeah, that's kind of where it got to. I got to the point where I was kind of just done with it. I'm like, you know, I tried the LA thing, and now I'm trying the publishing thing, and just like, man, this is a lot of work for really no reward. And I was pretty much, yeah, just I thought, you know, not being super angry or bitter about it. I was just like, all this extra time I could be spending, you know, being more productive. And but I thought I would turn to just self-publishing, which, you know, we can talk about really extensively too, because that whole world has totally changed with Amazon. But I went that route, and surprisingly enough, I've gotten more traction, more feedback, more sales, more satisfaction than I ever had of all these years trying to do anything else. And when I finally, what I thought was kind of like a downgrade, like, you know, giving in, really ended up being this great success. I've met publishers. Publishers have come directly to me. So I've totally, you know, kind of circumnavigated the agent process, you know, because, you know, as an agent too, you've got to split your profits. So,
right.
Now I've got direct conversations and friendships with publishers. So yeah, it's been, you know, meeting cool guys like you too. You know, I'd never meet anybody with a podcast if I was just, you know, sitting at home sending query letters all day.
Well, we appreciate that. I don't know that we stack up with a publisher level of awesomeness, but hey,
we try. But you know, that's what's cool though, is meeting people that, you know, you've gone out and you've done it your own way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Chad and I have done, is, you know, it's like, hey, let's do a podcast. We don't know how to do one, but let's talk to people that like the same stuff we do.
Right. And we have listeners literally all over the world. We've got one.
We picked up one in Australia. I saw that.
Yeah, Australia.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, somebody in India listens to us about every week. Germany, Berlin, every single week.
Yeah.
And somebody in Canada as well. And then there's that one in Moscow that picks up.
I don't know.
Now,
I think people all
over the country as well. But we, you know, we kind of start out and we like to focus on some local talent, and you're local. You're in Maryville, right?
Knoxville.
That's right. That Knoxville. Yeah, I knew you were close in the metro area though. So that's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah.
And we're always excited to promote folks like that. And we've talked to, you know, different authors of different things, and that creativeness that comes out of you guys is pretty awesome. I mean, we're talking heads here, but we like to talk to those creative people. So, you know, like I said on the last time when we interviewed you a little bit, Kildash, which is probably the coolest name.
I love that name.
That could ever that is like, that sounds like the best hero name or the best D&D character name. It's just a cool name.
Something, you know, I'm like thinking like some kind of big like sci-fi, like, you know, it, you know, episodic, you know, story.
Yeah,
know,
yeah. So Lee, give us a little overview on what the Kildash series is. And then kind of a review synopsis of book one, The Wizard and the Witch Queen, and then we'll go on to your new book.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll remind you too, the Kildash name was a total random, just like a shower thought when I, we talked about this a little bit at Fanboy, but it's like I wrote the book and I, you know, I went through all these editing and everything with no title at all. And, well, I was going to call it The Wizard and the Witch Queen, and my buddy, Zach Bowler, who's kind of like my, you know, he's friend / editor / you know, creative advisor. And he's like, man, that's just too much. You know, it might be a little too nerdy. you know, maybe a little bit of a mouthful. So, and I'm like, and Caleb, my character, he didn't have a last name. So I'm like, Caleb doesn't have a last name. And, you know, I'm texting my buddy. We're just kind of like throwing random words at each other, like space mage and, you know, Knights of the Void. And, you know, I just thought of some gibberish, like Kildash seemed to roll well. Caleb, Kildash.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. You know, so then
he works.
Yeah. So he got his last name and now it's the series title. And then I was like, well, now that Kildash is the series title, like I'll still use Wizard and the Witch Queen as a subtitle.
Yeah, that term Kildash, for us at our age, me and Wes, that kind of harks back. It sounds like a really awesome 80s action star.
Oh, yeah.
Caleb Kildash.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Probably some like subconscious workings in there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like that's a cop name. You know, like, you could hear like his sergeant hollering, Kildash! You know.
So tell us about the adventures of Mr. Kildash and what's your stories about?
Yeah, so it's kind of a genre blend, which was really intentional. You know, again, trying to break through in this industry. It's you're always trying to get, you know, a foot ahead or something new. So it is, you know, technically fantasy. Some people want to call it sci-fi because there's space travel. But technically, you know, nothing is sci-fi unless there's some sort of advanced technology. So there, even though it's space travel, there's no advanced technology. It's still... It's a medieval kind of classic sword and sorcery setting, but they've found a way to kind of harness magic to travel through space. You know, and I was trying to figure out a way to have magic and wizards with space travel. That was something I knew before I even had a story or obviously a name. I was trying to figure that out. But then you have these, you know, big time, like Star Wars, you've got Dune, and those are all kind of space fantasies. So I'm thinking like, how can I make my own in this saturated genre? I know there's tons and tons of other stories like that, but I'm stubborn and want to have my own in there. And I'm thinking why would they use swords and ride horses and live in a castle if they have spaceships and, you know, light travel, or light speed travel. And then it just kind of just hit me kind of like the name. I'm like, well, what if there is no advanced technology? What if it's, you know, what if it's just magic? What if they stumbled, you know, they're this ancient civilization and they just stumble on this ability, skip all the technological advancements that come before that. It's just boom, you know, you're going from horseback riding to now you have spaceships. So that's kind of where I ran with it. So Caleb, yeah, in this world, he's just kind of a simple guy. He lives on a planet, where there's really not much going on. He's kind of this aspiring adventurer. And I guess I should go back and say too, adventuring in this world is really like a career path. The adventurers are, you get a sponsorship, you mm-hmm. get a contract. They're almost like I don't want to say superheroes, but that's almost like the only good, you know, example I can think of. Cause there are, you know, militaries in this world. You do have kingdoms and they have their own soldiers, who are loyal to their king, king or queen. But then adventuring it's almost like SEAL Team 6. They're like the special forces, you know, they're more well-rounded. They're trained in everything. But it's also, instead of just being stuck fighting for one individual, you have a job where you really take contracts for anybody. So yeah, Caleb, he's kind of, an aspiring, adventurer. He's a young man, wanting to take that career path. And the book kind of opens, with a little bit of a tragedy, that kind of sets his adventure on, and he ends up becoming a deckhand, helping out on the ship. And one thing leads to another, while they're on one of these quests, and he triggers a booby trap. And the result of this booby trap is he ends up being, possessed by one of the most powerful wizards that, has ever lived. So
there's a twist.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So there's the hook. And that was something, very intentional too, I guess, with having him. I really thought a lot about how he was going to get his powers. Cause again, trying to avoid all these tropes, I didn't want him to inherit the powers by blood. I didn't want him to be like the prophesied return, because we've all seen that done so many times. So instead of there being a prophecy, or he's like a reincarnation, or he's, you know, the son of some great wizard, it's just kind of a freak accident.
And that is cool because you're right. Venturing away from those other tropes, that's I would not have thought of that way to gain power. That's pretty cool.
Thank you. So that's kind of what kicks it off. And there's some other kind of political stuff going on in the story. So for one, magic, you know, magic is, you kind of think of it as like a force of nature in this world. But actual spell casting is illegal. So no one's allowed to actually cast spells. And in the ancient history of this world, actually, there was a big war, and all of the spellcasters were killed off. So really, even though they use magic to spell cast, or sorry, even though they use magic to travel through space, it's a big no-no for one individual to actually manipulate magic to the extent of, you know, casting a spell at will. So then that also, once he inherits these powers, it then kicks off all these old rivalries. Kind of the world is at kind of a cold war, kind of a standstill, kind of recovering from this big, it's called the Ridding, where they, you know, they killed off all the spellcasters. So but then all that stuff comes back in motion as well.
That's pretty cool. I mean, so maybe the government's, maybe it's a control tactic to keep, if you keep these powerful people down a little bit, they can't uprise or anything like that. Maybe that's kind of an idea too, I guess. Yeah. That's pretty cool, and
that's kind of the influence and the example I use in the book. I'm paraphrasing here, but kind of the way the magic versus spell casting is explained is, you think the wind. So, you know, the wind is a force of nature. So having wind around, you know, that's nothing spectacular or abnormal. There's just wind as part of every day. But then building a sailboat, you know, now you're harnessing the wind and harnessing nature. So that's kind of the difference between magic existing in the world and just being a part of everyday life versus someone actually harnessing it and using it for their advantage. And just like you said, yeah, it is a big, it's something all the powers that be are afraid of. You know, it's having a spellcaster creates this very dangerous potential adversary. So 500 years prior, they're just like, all right, no more spellcasters ever. They're too dangerous. We can't stay in power. We'll have this constant threat. So they got rid of them all.
All right. That's cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
So where does, we don't want to give spoilers or anything like that, but, book two obviously is a continuation of Caleb's story then.
And that's
I don't know, maybe give a teaser for people that either may have already read your first book or just now learning about you. And that way they'll be like, I got to go on Amazon and buy both of them right now.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this. I'm like, how do I sell the sequel without spoiling the first one? But it's actually not that difficult because the second story, I don't want to say it is a side story or spinoff. It's still a continuation, but there's a big shift in the perspective. So for example, the first book is entirely first person. So the first book is all told by Caleb's perspective. And kind of halfway, three quarters of the way through the book, while I was writing it, I was like, man, this may have been a mistake because this book is way bigger than I thought it was going to be. Cause now I've, you know, established all these planets. I have this huge cast of characters. So going into the second book, I was like, I have too much going on to keep it first person. I've introduced all these lovable characters, all these places, and now everyone's spread out. You know, how do I keep telling this from Caleb's perspective? So I knew I wanted to switch over to third person. but it just seemed really sloppy to do in the middle of a series. Like, I've never heard of that, someone going from first to third person. But I again, just kind of like the name Killdash and the genre blend, it just hit me probably in the shower at some point. I'm like, what if the first book existed in the series as a MacGuffin? So that's kind of how I made the transition. So going into the second book, so I'll try to explain this without being super confusing, but going into the second book, the first book is actually a book written by Caleb that now exists in the Killdash world.
Okay, yeah, so, that's pretty cool. Well, yeah. That's pretty cool. Okay. And I think also too, that is something that when I've read a series of books before, sometimes things can get stale, but the fact that you went from a first person to another aspect of it, I think, could breathe life into it. I think that's a neat idea.
I like the fact that it's his book and it's set in his world.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
I mean, that's a neat little way to, you know, a little workaround as far as to make it all flow. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the book of Killdash, which is in the book of Killdash.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, I was looking at this. Yeah. I was looking at the picture that you posted on our page with you holding up the two books, and the art. I saw the first book at Fanboy, but I hadn't seen the art of the second one. The cover art is really cool. And, you know, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but you judge a book by its cover. I mean, that's you go and you pick them up off the shelf. Yeah. And both of those are really cool. So tell me about the art on that. How did that come to be? Did you outsource that, or can you draw too as good as what is right?
I cannot draw at all. So. And I will say, judging a book by its cover, it is ironic that's such a good saying to, you know, a good life lesson. Don't judge a book by its cover, and it applies to everything in life except for books.
I was going to say, that's how they sell comic books. Is you have to grab their attention. So I mean, it's the same with you know,
novel.
You know, you've got to have something because you know,
you're going to grab their attention.
Well, so I mean, if you walk into a bookstore, there's just, you know. Yeah. Aisles and aisles and aisles of books. It's like, what makes you stand out? And, you know, it's that cover art.
You, I guess as an author, you want people to pick it up and turn around and look at the back of it, or click the next little button over on Amazon so you can see the back of it to see the synopsis of it. So where did that art come from, man?
Yeah, so I found an artist. Of all places, she lives in the Ukraine. I found her on Fiverr, which is kind of, if you guys aren't familiar, it's a website. I don't want to say it's a social network, but it's kind of just a place where independent creatives can get together and hire each other and work together. So someone will say, you know, I'm a writer, well, I'm an artist, well, I do voice acting, and it's just a good network to find different talent. So I was just kind of scrolling through, and I saw some examples of hers and her. You know, she goes by, I don't know her full name, but her screen name is Rebecca Covers, if anybody else wants to use her. But yeah, so she ended up being awesome. So what I do is with these covers, and I want to release this at some point, is like a timeline of how these covers how we come to the final product, because it's one of my favorite. It's kind of like the reward for finishing a book. I love going to the cover part to actually like get together and collaborate. So what I typically do is I'll draw stick figures out. You know, so both of these books, I have somewhere a scrap of paper where I literally just drew stick figures with little arrows. Like, this is a hat, you know, this right. is a shiny blue orb. This is a spaceship. And then I'll give her a list of words as far as the emotion. I'll say, you know, I want it to feel adventurous or gloomy or, you know, dark and scary. And she just nails it. I mean, I usually don't have to, you know, make too many revisions, but And I'll send some sample art too. So I'll send my little stick figure drawing. And then as far as the spaceship on the cover of the first Killdash, it's kind of in the distance flying up, you know, off the page. But I found a bunch of pictures of old, like World War II submarines. And even like, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, there were submarines like as far back as the Civil War. So, you know, I was sending her pictures of things like that. I want the space travel to feel very like crude and rudimentary. They're just kind of figuring this stuff out. So yeah, I kind of send her samples of that. And then going into the second book, you know, that the girl on the cover there, she's kind of exactly how I've described this character in the book. And with this one, actually, I sent her a picture. It's one of the Witcher books, and it's Geralt is, he's kind of like, his back is, you know, facing the audience, and he's kind of looking at some burning, like a burning castle. And I was like, I kind of like this castle in the background, and it, you know, all the fire, and it is kind of this like ominous thing. He's walking into this combat, cause he's kind of like the, you know, I guess the protector going into a dangerous situation. But I kind of wanted to do the opposite with this book, kind of this person, you know, with the character facing the audience in the fire and castle behind her. It's almost, you know, you can kind of see that that's in her wake. She's kind of created this.
Kind of like, I did this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that.
You know, what's interesting looking at these two covers is the, to me personally, the Wizard and the Witch Queen one has, and I'm showing it to Wes over here, it is definitely a fantasy feel. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe knowing the way the story is, it has a little steampunk feel to it for me.
Yeah.
And I've always liked steampunk stuff. I did some steampunk cosplay and things like that. And I really think that's a cool genre to kind of play on. Whereas the second book is very, very fantasy.
I get more of a D&D vibe off of it.
And like, I love it. And the your character there on the cover with that fire whip and that, the fangs and the horns, that looks like a very old school, devil.
That's old TSR.
Yeah. But it's like an old school devil face, which is really, really cool. And I'm a big fan of that. That's awesome.
I agree.
It's kind of, it's heavily inspired by like Japanese Oni.
I can see that in that now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I can't think of the word now. The name for these, the masks they would wear, but yeah, it's like a Japanese culture. And there's actually so when I went to Japan while I was writing the first Killdash book, and so towards the very end of the first Killdash book, the party stops in this tavern again. You're right on, right on it, Wes. It's very D&D inspired.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's a good trail to follow. So they, you know, traditionally, you know, like D&D party stops at a tavern, but it's kind of this Japanese inspired tavern. And you can totally tell, if you knew what was going on in my life at that time, that I was in Japan while I wrote that, that part. So, yeah. But then I decided, you know, I fell in love, I've always loved Japanese culture, but then going to Japan, I was like, man, I've got to put some like Japanese fantasy in here. So I did start moving into the series since I was developing the world and all the other planets. There is like a very heavily Japanese planet in this world with some Japanese fantasy. So that's kind of where the book doesn't like move in that direction, I would say, but it's there.
But it's got that flavor to it where if you're reading it, you can put an image into your head that you can relate it to.
So you've got one and two. Is this going to be a trilogy situation or what?
It'll be four, actually. Four. So I think the proper term is a quartet, but you know,
we'll go with that.
There's some debate of whether that's for music. It's a
quadrilogy.
Wes just made up a word for you there. So
yeah. Feel free to use that, copyright Nerdy Old Men Podcast in 2001.
The Kildash Quartet just sounds.
Now, I like that.
Kildash Quadrilogy. I don't know.
I think we'll go with the Kildash Quartet.
That might be hard for the Quartet. Sounds better. I could just see the guy like singing in it.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what comes to mind. You got like four fantasy characters singing
in the Kildash Quartet. But that's some exciting stuff. And I don't think that the last time we interviewed you, we did this, but if we did, we're going to do it again. We're going to give you our good initiation to our full blown interview episode of their Nerdy Old Man Rapid Fire Question Session.
Okay.
We've sprung this on him. He's not prepared.
Oh, no.
We're going to ask you a few little silly questions, and it's an opinionated thing. There are right answers, which are the ones I would pick, and there are the wrong answers, which is the ones Wes would pick.
Which Chad's never right, but that's okay.
No, we're going to give you a question. The first thing pops into your head, and you just spit it out. Are you ready, sir?
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. Now, these are all over the place, so just, hold on.
Wes has got his notes. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. What was the best cartoon when you were growing up? Like, what was your favorite cartoon?
First thing that comes to my mind is X-Men, and then Pokemon.
Okay, there we go.
You can't beat that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say I can't choose two.
No, we'll go with that.
Yeah, we're fast and loose with the rules.
We like you, Lee. You can go with two. So. No, everybody else, no. They only get one. Okay. So you've got to live in a science fiction world, not Kildash. You have to pick another one. A science fiction world, whether it be books, comics, movies, television shows, whatever. What would you pick?
Oh man. So this one, obviously, the first thing that comes to my mind is Star Wars, because I'm just, you say sci-fi and my head goes Star Wars.
Yeah.
But then that's but it's a kind of a complex question, because there's favorite sci-fi. But it's like, do you want to live in your favorite spot? I'm thinking my favorite fantasy world. I just read this series by Joe Abercrombie, and it was an amazing fantasy. But I'm like, I don't want to live there. Everybody's killing each other.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know. Star Wars, that's a big kind of a big galaxy. You could probably find a peaceful place.
Probably
to live there. Yeah.
Until the Empire comes crashing down. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe in The Princess Bride, that seems very like whimsically. And maybe I can get a job on the Dread Pirate Robin.
There you go. Maybe you become the Dread Pirate Robin.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, Wes, go ahead.
Okay, now kind of staying in the same vein, like, what would you, if you could pick one, what would be your favorite sci-fi weapon?
Oh, yes.
Books, TV, movies, anything goes. Like, if you could have one fictional weapon, what would it be?
All right. Well, keeping to the rules, since you guys said first thing that comes to my mind, I thought jetpack.
Hey.
Even though it's not really a weapon.
We'll count that.
You could weaponize it. It's pretty versatile.
Well, Boba Fett did.
Yeah, Boba Fett's got a weapon on his. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, staying in that Star Wars vein.
I dig it. Yeah. No, I like that. Okay, here's one. In a lot of any kind of pop culture genre, sometimes vehicles are a character of themselves, whether it's Kit that can actually talk or it's Magnum P.I.'s Ferrari, which is a character in and of itself. You get to pick some vehicle.
The keys are in it.
Some vehicle in pop culture, books, movies, comics, TV shows, whatever, that it can be yours, you can drive forever. What is it?
Oh, that's easy. It'd be the Back to the Future DeLorean.
There you go. Heck yeah, man. That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one.
Not only is it a cool car, but I can time travel.
Yeah.
I actually have one hanging up on my Christmas tree.
There you go.
Sweet. Love it.
Yeah, a little DeLorean ornament.
Okay, I'm going to hit him with the most difficult question of all time.
Yeah, bring us home.
Does pineapple go on a pizza?
Yes, it does. I'm sorry to say.
There we go. That is the correct
answer. That is the correct answer,
sir. He has won the game. He gets a lifetime supply of nothing.
Oh, lifetime. Oh, no.
He thought he was going to be Rice-A-Roni or something like that, you know.
Yeah. A lifetime of awesomeness.
It was great, like, growing up as a kid and being the only kid that liked pineapple pizza, because when there's a pizza party, the pineapple stack is all yours. Nobody's going to come.
There you go.
You know what? One of our most interesting answers we've ever had that was from Mr. Vinny Vineyard, who is a local filmmaker, and we're actually going to do an episode with him. Wes, this is a pop thing for you. No, you don't know that coming up because his next movie's coming up. Yeah. So we're going
to
do
but
that.
Vinny actually threatened to throw me out of the window.
Yes, he did. He actually over the phone. He threatened to throw us out of the window, but then he actually turned me on to pepperoni. And pineapple,
yes.
Which is actually fan-freaking-tastic, by the way.
Okay, I'll have to try that.
Yeah,
people get really, like, personal about that debate. The pineapple.
We have found that out. Yeah. We have found that out firsthand. That have very strong opinions.
It's like, get all offensive.
You ruin a friendship.
Yeah, I know, right? it's like picking Star Trek or Star Wars.
I know.
You can ruin friendships over that stuff. Hey, man, give us a lowdown again on where folks can find you, your books, and all of your content.
So all of my books, I have the Killdash series, but also a book we talk more in depth on at Fanboy called Exodus. It's just kind of a standalone allegory sci-fi. But yeah, they're all on Amazon. So the another cool thing about the word Killdash is there's nothing in the world named Killdash other than my book. So if you search it in, you're not going to like find a vacuum cleaner brand or something like that.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
So yeah, so if you go to Amazon and search Killdash, you'll find it. If to be extra sure, you can do Killdash and Lee Ellis. And Killdash is one L. That's come up before. People, for some reason, it won't even give you it'll take you to like the opposite end of the internet if you spell Killdash with two L's. So it's Killdash. And then my name is Leellis. But yeah, you can find me on Amazon, search Killdash Lee Ellis or Exodus Lee Ellis. I've got the hard copies, and then ebooks, they're all 99 cents. And I might be releasing like a hardback soon. Yeah. Just right now I have paperback. Yeah. And then I have Instagram and Twitter, and I never use them ever.
That's all right. Well, people can go there and look. I just looked up with your name, Lee Ellis, on Amazon, and it does pop up that way as well. And I'm sure you're aware of this too, but they also have your first book now in the Killdash, The Wizard and the Witch Queen, on Kindle Unlimited. So if you're a Kindle member, you can read his first book as part of your service. And that's awesome. A free advertisement for Amazon. We're supporting Lee, but that's a pretty big deal, I think, for them to put that on their thing like that, because another local artist or author, Rich Davis, his comic series Cult of Dracula is also currently on Unlimited. So that's a big deal, Lee. So that's pretty awesome, man. That's cool.
Awesome. Yeah, that's the first I've heard of it. So.
Yeah, yeah. I just clicked it on there. I guess they send you royalties when people pick up on that one too. So that's pretty awesome, man. It's awesome. They like it and put it in there. So that's cool.
Cool.
Hey, brother, thanks for taking the time with us this morning, man.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I wanted to say too, the first time we did an interview, I hadn't heard of you guys yet, and now I can actually say I'm a fan because I have been listening to the show.
Oh, appreciate that.
Cool, yeah.
Thanks, man.
And I'm going to give like mad props to the comic book guru. I've been listening to the history, the Golden Age.
With McKay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one is spectacular. So anyone listening to this, listen to that one too.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah, we've done two with him, and we got a whole series lined up where he's going to go through a lot of stuff. He's teaching us a lot of good stuff, man. He's amazing. So, yeah,
I love that stuff.
Good, man. I appreciate it, brother. Let us know when the next one comes out. We'll talk to you, and then you know, eventually, when it turns into a blockbuster film, we want to talk to you as well. Yeah. So that's pretty awesome, absolutely. Man.
Get a red carpet invite on that one.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I'll get you two guys in the movie somewhere.
Heck yeah, man. All right. At least get our t-shirt on somebody. Yeah. All right, man.
You'll be like the two pirates in
kick ass. The Pirates I love of
the Caribbean.
It.
There we go.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, man. Well, and until next time, this is the Old Bald Man with Mr. Lee Ellis and Redneck Wes.
Yeehaw.
Now, a sample of Lee Ellis's Godblood.
Came up for Rogot's belly. He parried, elbowed Garagot in the teeth, and slammed him into a tree. Through the tree, and out the other side, and into the dirt. Splinters fell all around, and the severed tree came falling, crushing a giant mushroom to the earth. Garagot kicked Rogot, and he went soaring, flipped backwards and crashed down 20 paces away. The Mushroom King was up and after him. Rogot grabbed his axe, pulling up a handful of leaves with it, and leapt to his feet. Their weapons collided, and they were at it again, snarling, hacking, shoving and punching, godblood thumping in their veins. Garagot thrusted the flat side of his blade hard against Rogot's axe, pressed him back, then shoved a crust-covered finger deep into Rogot's ear.